Welcome to Friday Breakfast with Capitalize, part of the Future Positive podcast. In this bite-sized weekly episode of the Future Positive podcast, we will take you through three business stories of the week, which you may have missed and which are impacting small businesses. I'm Alex Clark, Head of Revenue for Capitalize in South Africa, and I'm joined by Kirsty McGregor, founder of the Corporate Finance Network and Capitalize's Accountants in Residence. Hi, Kirsty. How are you today?
Hiya, Alex. I'm really good, thank you. You've got a real laid-back tone about you today. Is it really nice over there in South Africa at the moment? Is it all really lovely weather?
I was going to say it feels nice that for week two of the podcast, A, it's good to be back, but B, I'm in back home in Cape Town. So yeah, very comfortable. I've got the dog curled up next to me. The sun is shining, so no complaints. But we're short and we're snappy, Kirsty. So let's get straight into it. And talk to me, what's your first story this week?
Okay, so our first story this week is about the upcoming spring statement from the Chancellor in the UK and all of the predictions and requests from every business group out there are going to the Chancellor and getting it in the press. And of course, as we record this on a Thursday, the interest rates is the big story as well, which is going to be all over the Friday press as you're listening to this. I've actually included the Federation of Small Businesses wish list as one of our articles in today's show notes because they're pretty thorough about what they're looking for from the Chancellor. But also an article that I read in the Lancashire Telegraph, no less, very highly readership, but I'd seen that they'd picked up a survey from the Institute of Directors where 669 business leaders have responded. So, you know, a decent amount of people responding. And they're actually saying that for them in business, 83% of them are more concerned about inflation than about interest rates rising. So we expect interest rates to continue to rise over the next year. The US raised theirs yesterday. So we will definitely see what the Chancellor has to say about the longer term outlook on Wednesday. And you'll be pleased to know that we are also bringing back the budget bingo card for listing out for what the Chancellor might be saying when he stands up. And we're also going to be live tweeting it from the Capitalizers Twitter account. So we'll be there fingers poised to tweet out all the important things on Wednesday. What happens in South Africa, Alex?
I was going to say, I've sold you down the river here a little bit, Kirsty, because we were going to record this after the announcement, but unfortunately I couldn't do it. So we'll know tomorrow when this goes out and you and I can sit there and think and look about whether what we thought was going to happen happened or not. But the South African story is a little bit different. We are still, as there are a lot of countries, showing economic growth rates. You know, they're still well before, very much pre-COVID, and our inflationary drivers are a little bit different. We're driven by the supply side and not the consumer side, so we have a cost push inflation. And so the current situation for us, with obviously rising fuel prices, rising food costs, etc., it's really not looking good. We were even in February at 4.5%. So it's a tough environment for us. Yeah,
is that your interest rate? Yeah, well.
So tough environment for us. That's our, So, it's not looking good, but we're used to it. Our lending and borrowing rates over the last couple of years have been better. Our repo rate has been down as well, so lower than it's ever been. So there are some good things coming out of it. I think, we've always had a pretty tough economic environment. And certainly in South Africa, we still haven't yet got back to the kind of pre-economic growth rates, even though we have seen some recovery coming through the beginning of 2022 as well.
Mm. I know. I mean, we talk about interest rates. Yours at 4.5. I remember when they were double digits in the UK. So, we've got a long way till we get back to that. But it's something to keep an eye on. Anyway, our second story is also kind of related to cost increases. This is a story from CityAM, and all these links will be in the show notes. And this is some research that a law firm has done, RPC, showing that there have been an increasing number of whistleblowers, particularly in the hospital and retail sectors, who are informing the authorities that the national minimum wage and the national living wage rates are not being met by their employers, and there have been breaches of the legislation. And they've reported that 235 complaints were made in the last 12 months, 2020 to 2021, and that was 171 in the previous year. And what they're actually saying, though, is that it was really difficult due to furlough and different rates were being paid and different hours were being worked. And it was really a confusing situation for wages anyway over lockdown, the various lockdowns. But RPC, I think quite rightly, are saying as lawyers that this legislation is just too complicated for owners, business owners. And especially because now wage costs are going up again in April with the national minimum wage going up and also the new national insurance levy they're bringing in for health and social care increasing from the 6th of April, then there is going to be an extra cost on employers, but let's not make it even more difficult for them to comply with their obligations by just kind of making everything as simple as possible. So we'll see if the Chancellor mentions that on Wednesday.
And I was reading this article, in the back of my mind, there was that little nagging devil that's like, there's a big difference here between kind of negligently not following the rules and regulations and that kind of like semi-intentional ability to kind of, what do they call it, plausible deniability. The rules are complex. We're not 100% sure, therefore we might have got it a bit wrong.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you really don't want to see that, you know, have that devil in your head where you're like, maybe people have kind of tried to like fudge it a little bit to see what they can get away with, which
you're
is
so cynical, Alex.
I am, and that's the worst form of capitalism, right? The cost of production is going up, so you're trying to squeeze margins wherever you can. But you know, as a big company, you know, as a multi, you know, a lot of these guys are multi-million dollar, you know, companies. They've got big enough legal teams, they've got enough money in the bank to be able to go and make sure that they're whiter than white. But I do think, you know, where you look at the smaller businesses that have less disposable income to invest in this, you know, we have to be doing everything we can to keep it as simple as possible. You know, business owners should not have to worry about the complexity of legislation for paying their staff. They should be able to think about, how do we get our staff back into work? Because that's what everybody wants. So we can drive that economic recovery and also put money back in people's pockets and focus actually on running our business and getting back to the kind of growth and success that we had.
And very clearly understanding the costs of all of that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. It shouldn't be complicated, right? That's the way that I look at it. It shouldn't be difficult. It should be easy. We should be empowering people to be able to employ and not be feared about making that employment happen.
Yeah.
So 100%. That's a great story. I think it was, you know, very well written. And the third story, Kirsty, is a brilliant one. I love this. It's amazing to see this story. I really enjoyed reading this article. So tell us a bit more. Tell us a bit more about it.
I will. This is from Business Live. And again, the show notes will have the link. So do go and read this, because I'm going to go a little bit off track from the actual story itself. The story was really about a law firm, and I think the law profession do this much more widely than the accounting profession do. They are mentoring some undergraduates in order to actually, for them, encourage more diversity of Black lawyers and mixed race lawyers. So they are, it's a firm called Brown Jacobson, a law firm, and they have chosen to mentor 12 undergraduates for 6 months and also give them 2 weeks paid work experience with the intention of bringing more of more diversity into their own sector, which I think obviously is an amazing idea, and we should absolutely be encouraging that and doing that ourselves in the accounting profession. But also more widely, I just thought, is this something the accounting profession can learn from? Because we have got a massive recruitment problem, and you know, just been talking about it again this week with some of my member firms, and just understanding that they have really struggling to recruit and really having to think about their recruitment so that they can compete in quite a small market out there. And what we are, a supply market, I mean, as in candidates. And I just thought, maybe if we brought in more structured schemes with universities as an accounting firm, does that mean you're going to be able to differentiate yourself from the other employers? And it also gives you a practical chance to assess those students for a longer period as potential employees, rather than just seeing them in an interview process. So could we bring in some structured mentoring, better links with universities and colleges, and see whether this could be a longer term solution to our recruitment issues?
Do you know something I would pick up on? And firstly, I must say, I think as everybody, you know, would now profess to also agree to, is I'm a huge believer in diversity and inclusivity in the workplace. You know, the broader background of individual we can bring in to a working place, the greater the amount of creativity, the greater the perspective is that we have. And the likelihood is the better we are able to progress as a business, because we have a broader understanding of our potential, you know, target audience.
Yeah.
But I love the way you talk there about not just university, but colleges. So one of the things I read when I took away from this article, and, you know, I've got a friend who is, you know, very, very big on driving diversity And she is, you know, that's her whole job is around, she's director of diversity in a large company and helping them to increase their diversity. But one of the biggest challenges is actually, you know, very few people from disadvantaged backgrounds even end up at university. So even by going to the university pool, we're just limiting the amount of diversity that we're going into. And so how do you go further up the funnel there and look at colleges? How do you perhaps look at picking up individuals who are intelligent and bright and capable at a younger age and helping them on that journey from actually getting out of school into university and then onto your work scheme? Now, I think that's a brilliant opportunity. Depending on the size and type of the accounting firm, let's say, they're going to have different levels of reach. And so you can't expect every accounting firm to be able to go right the way through to college students.
But well, actually, you would, you know, because I think the profession has changed a lot in the last 10 years. And due to the different training programs and the way that the exams are structured by the professional bodies, there is a lot more opportunities to come in at different times in your career. So you can definitely come in at 16, 18, 21, or, you know, as a mature student or mature entrant as well. And that is definitely happening across all sizes of firms. But they've had to recognize that bringing a 16-year-old or even an 18-year-old in is very into the world of work is a very different learning journey for them than bringing maybe someone in that's lived on their own at university. They're a bit more mature, you know, that 3 years, 4 years makes a massive difference to their understanding of the world, and you know, so they definitely do have to think about that. But yeah, there's a real mix.
Definitely. And it requires a whole different management scheme, because you have to work with this individual in a very different capacity to help them on the journey of learning and growing, and not just growing as a professional, but becoming an adult, right? You're 16 to 21. The 16-year-old Alex versus 21 was unrecognizable. But I also really, really like the fact in this article, they talk about paid work experience. I think that's another key thing. There's a lot of people out there that are doing a huge amount of work experience, thinking it's going to get them closer to a job. They're doing it for free. And then at the end of it, it doesn't get them anywhere. And I think actually that paid work experience, appropriate remuneration for your time, it is a really, really important part. But I love this story. I love to see this, the journey that firms like this have been on. And I think it was a really nice, a really good read, wholesome, heartwarming almost in terms of the direction as well. So that was a very nice article to flag. And for the first time, Kirsty, you have given me permission this week to do my fun story, to give my little twist. Now, I'm going to take a completely different tangent, because for anyone out there that is hooked on Netflix and hooked specifically on Drive to Survive, the new series came out this week. And I'm not going to say I binge watched it, but I binge watched it. And it's another brilliant series. It's, you know, we all know that for those F1 followers that last season, you know, with the Verstappen Hamilton kind of crescendo at the end of the season was a big one. The F1 launches this week again in Bahrain. So we pick up where we left off. And you know, this Drive to Survive was a brilliant, it just captured last season's kind of drama. A few interesting articles have come out about this particular season from like Verstappen saying that he thinks they're creating rifts between drivers when they don't necessarily exist. But you know, brilliant season, brilliant watch, 10 kind of 30 to 40 minute episodes. So if you find yourself with a bit of loose time over the next month or so, I'd highly recommend watching that. It was a good
TV critic, Alex. Love it.
Maybe that's the new segment. It's Alex's fun story of the week, aka TV critic. I don't think I'll cut it as a TV critic. I don't watch enough, but I found myself with a bit of spare time this weekend.
What a business that is. Now, though, Formula One, what a business that is. And what they have to deal with, the dramas and the money involved and the traveling. And they just travel as like a village, don't they, all around the... They'd stay together and go, especially during COVID, they had to all be in a bubble, didn't they?
Yeah, it is. Really? I'm, you know, I'd love to understand the mechanics and operations between moving people around the world like that. But, you know, that in itself is like, I think a whole different series. They're used to doing it and they do it very, very well. But yeah, that was my fun story. So that's my segment. And next week, I'll think of something slightly different, perhaps. But that wraps us up for this week. So Kirsty, thank you very much for your three stories. For those that are new to Capitalize, you know, a reminder about who we are and what we do. Our vision is very much to give small businesses and their advisors transparency and control over their business finances. We want every small business to be able to identify risks that they might face in their business, explore how they stand from a credit perspective, and then to work ideally with their advisor with how to choose the right funding that fits their business in order to drive their goals and ensure that they build their business for success. for those of you who listen to the podcast, either for the first time today, don't forget to subscribe, or those regular listeners, we know you're out there, don't forget to rate and review the podcast to make sure that you get us the right level of notoriety, let's say, but also you get those future podcasts straight off the press. Next week, Tuesday, I believe, we will also be releasing our latest interview podcast with David Tuck, discussing how software providers and accountants can work together to produce the best outcome for SMEs. Go figure, that's the same narrative that we like to talk about on today's podcast. David's been doing it for a very long time in the industry, a good personal friend of mine as well. So that's a ripper of an interview. Make sure you tune in for that, everybody. And if you would like to find out more about Capitalize, you'd like to see more about the Future Positive podcast, please go check us out on www.capitalize.com. And it leaves me now to say thank you for listening. We'll be back with our regular Friday breakfast next week with more stories from across the week, another fun story segment. And Kirsty, thank you very much for joining me again this week.
Thanks, Alex. And for those in the UK, don't forget to tune in on Wednesday to our live tweets. See you. Have a good week.
Bye-bye.